All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy. We'd love you to support this show. Please like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Your likes and subscription helps us to grow and attract interviews and content. So please retweet and share our posts. Your contributions are appreciated. All right, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us live. Thank you to everyone who joined us last week for our 10th anniversary show. It was great to have all of that participation. A lot of nice comments also afterwards. I'd like to just draw attention to a couple that jumped out at me, and one that really makes a lot of sense. This is M. Murphy. Said, I just listened to the podcast and wanted to take a quick minute to say how much I enjoy the show and appreciate all your hard work, time, and dedication. You guys are a great group of fans with varied opinions and ideas, and I look forward to each new episode and the unique outlook you bring. You provide a much-needed escape from the real world to give fans something to look forward to. You know what? I look forward to these shows every week because it's an escape from the world for me as well. So if our pontificating and conversations and joking gives anyone entertainment, then that's a win-win situation from my perspective. So thank you very much. But also there's another comment. I think it was yesterday, Bobby Mitchell Music, for someone who had a very difficult 2024 and who finds, you know, entertainment and relief from the challenges of life in listening to podcasts. And that applies not only to us, but to other shows. And that's an important thing to remember, that this is an escape for all of us. Music is a big part of my life, so I love getting together with these guys, or knuckleheads, if you want to use that phrase, either to co-opt it from three sides. You know, getting together and just talking with fans, fellow fans, is a great thing, no matter what we're talking about. So thank you very much. Where's Drago? No Villa today, or who was it you were watching? Liverpool's just wrapping up thrashing Ipswich, so I don't need to follow that score today. CMAC, thank you for joining us. G Chubb, Super Zapper. What news this week? Well, yesterday Kiss dropped something very surprising on their social media, and this is something that I wish they'd been dropping years ago, because they posted the studio invoice for what I recently did, the Rock and Roll All Night demo story or song story, because that 50th anniversary was coming up, and it was yesterday that they entered the studio 50 years ago to record four songs: Rock and Roll All Night, Mistake, which wasn't used, Burning Up with Fever, which wasn't used, and Anything for My Baby. So they had that sitting in their archive, and it was great to, you know, get to hear, to see the full part of the invoice and see them celebrating a 50th anniversary coming up. So very neat. I hope that during the rest of this year and going forward, that they start sharing a lot more of the Paul Stanley storage locker finds, or whatever, wherever that came from, because that shit is very cool to see and very exciting. You guys get to check that out. And what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I saw it. I checked it out on Facebook, I believe it was. And I always love those kind of things as well. I mean, I love finding those kind of things, even if it's not Kiss or other band stuff, just to see how long it took. I'm especially interested in seeing the differences in hourly costs from years back then to now, and how much, you know, it's changed over the years, and how long they spent on certain songs. I mean, they did four songs apparently at that one session, and it was like a 8-hour session or so. So that was interesting. And the two they kept, two they didn't, you know, so it was really good. I thought it was a very cool find. And like you said, hopefully there's more of those to come.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, when I saw that, I was surprised, especially them doing that on Kiss, you know, Kiss doing that, because they never do that. It's so that just kind of struck a chord with me, like, is this part of Pop House, you know, kind of thing, things to come maybe. And then they're focusing on 50th anniversary of Just to Kill, which is coming up in March. So, you know, maybe, you know, they're promoting it, that 50th anniversary, for a reason, you know.
I'm not surprised that Ken thought this little picture would equal a Dress to Kill Super Deluxe box set. Optimistic Ken had a picture like, oh, this definitely means something great is coming. So,
it would be nice. Yeah,
I'm with you, though. It would be very nice. Ken shared something with us this week, like, oh, that it's the 50th anniversary of Dress to Kill and Alive are coming out this year. And it means like, Kiss is planning on some colored vinyl and some other goodies. Like, oh, wow, that sounds like exactly like what we've gotten the last several years.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's better things to come than that. But I checked it out. I think that it's really cool. It's something different that they're sharing. And hopefully, you know, there's more good things like this. There's cool things like this that they share. And hopefully... I don't know. Hopefully it is going somewhere. I'm with you, Ken. I'm always hopeful too.
Daniel.
Well, you guys said it all, but let's just hope this leads somewhere. That it just doesn't end up like a fart in the wind, you know. Let's hope it leads to something spectacular. And let's hope that 2025 is way better than 2024, because that was the crappiest Kiss year in my Kiss fandom. So I'm just... you know, hoping, but you never know.
Oh, you're done so quickly.
I
was trying to just post a picture of it in a little bit better quality. I'd only ever seen a quarter of that, so it was very nice to see the full thing. Let's just see.
Surprised you don't have quickly. It.
I think it was pretty cool when Paul played Mistake on one of the cruises. He actually knew it. He knew it note by note.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I managed to do that real time alive. And, you know, I didn't have it. There was a sale by someone whose name I don't mention anymore because they're dead to me. Who clearly had this. It's very cool to see. I'm with Ken for being optimistic, and again, who knows what it means. I'd say don't read too much into it, but I don't know who controls Kiss's socials now either, whether it's Pop House, it still controls them, or controls them now, or whether the US guys and Kiss still control Kiss's socials. It's weird. So who cares? All right, 7 years. What?
I was just going to say, talking about their socials, I was thinking the other day, I was just wondering if Kiss will, you know, if or Pop House, whatever, redesign the homepage, you know, like overhaul it or something like that.
Yeah, who knows? As long as it doesn't become like Gene Simmons' webpage, which is just...
Oh, no, that's not a good one.
Yeah, that's...
I don't even go to that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other news. So 7 years ago this week, Vinny came out of the woodwork. I don't want to relitigate or retalk about all of his shortcomings and all that. I want to put a positive spin on this. You know, in those 7 years, what is the biggest thing that Vinny has accomplished in your mind? Lonnie, you were there that day. You know, what's the biggest thing that Vinny has done in 7 years on the strength of his comeback?
I tend to think that was the pinnacle. it was great that weekend, and I think that we all, you know, kind of left there feeling good about, wow, this is really cool, and it was great just to see him and have him do a public appearance, and I think that was the high, actually, you know, and I think it was cool when he did the vault thing with Gene in Nashville, you know, a couple months later, but. You know, but both the things I'm talking about were 7 years ago. I mean, it's been just kind of static ever since then. There's not much to really talk about. I mean, Julian, you and I were sitting there, and he says, "Oh yeah, that box set, it's definitely coming out this year." And you know, we're like, "Oh great!" And we've gotten. Not only did we not get the box set, we didn't get anything. We haven't really gotten anything. So, I think the height was 7 years ago when we were in Atlanta. Sorry.
Yeah, Daniel, what about you?
Well, I wouldn't agree that the stint he did with Gene Simmons is one of the high notes, but when you compare it to the rest of the stuff he did, I guess there isn't a lot of stuff that has happened. So it might be one of the high points. But for me, the one thing I remember I recall an interview he did with Eddie Trunk when he was going to attend that thing, and he had his hopes up, but there was, he was a bit late for that interview, even though it was like his first official interview. So I recall being a bit hesitant in, you know, singing Hallelujah for him, because he wasn't 100% even when he started out back in 8 years ago or whatever it was. There were problems right off the bat, but that interview with Eddie Trunk was somewhat hopeful and made me smile a bit. So I was getting my hopes up, but they were quickly crushed by his behavior. So I guess I'm with Lonnie. He hit kind of a high note out of the gate, and then it fizzled out a bit.
Yeah, I'm with Lonnie too. Lonnie is the voice of reason here today on that topic. You know, that was the high point. We didn't know it at the time, but there was positivity, there was goodwill. It was the community, and, you know, seeing people from all over the world again, and then Vinny doing, you know, some guitar with Fleischmann, you know, was, we got music, we got interview, we got to meet the guy. It was, you know, it was a little challenge, but that was the high point then, and afterwards it was inevitable in some ways. Ken?
Yeah, I have to say that was the high point, just the that expo that they had, but where you guys were at, and it was, you know, it was very cool. I thought there was going to be a lot to come based on the interviews and so on, but it was kind of a lot of nothing. You know, we're going to send this, we're going to finally release the box sets, you know, the ones you ordered, and then new music, and which we keep hearing about every year. There's a new record every year, and it never, you know, nothing happens. It's just kind of strange. I think the only good thing is some of the fans were able to go to some of his little, you know, small events that he had, you know, get-togethers, so the ones in lockdown or whatever it
all
is.
All five of them.
You know, behind, you know, you don't know what's going on. You know, you can't 15. Bring your phones and stuff like that. So that's good for the fans, the big fans of him who paid for, you know, to see him for an hour or two or however long those things are. So, yeah, that's it. But the original, just the coming back at the beginning, that was it. And then it's, you know, nothing really.
Actually, one of our highest ranking episodes on YouTube is an interview that Julian did with one of the guys that attended some Vinny thing. I think it's well over 5,000 views on YouTube. So people are interested.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vinny remains an enigma.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unanimous. I think the only thing that came out of that was just that first appearance. And the funny thing is that Eddie Trunk interview, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, there was a huge delay in opening the doors when Vinny was there, and I think it was the Eddie Trunk thing that delayed it. It was he was there doing the interview while everyone's waiting outside to go inside. Like, what a stupid arrangement that was, but, you know, but again, typical of something that Vinny Vincent would be associated with, you know, something like that. But I mean, it could have been Eddie Trunk's fault too. Why did he have to do it before the whole thing started? I don't understand that either. So, but, you know, from there on in, it was a downhill slide. There were things promised and not given, including some of these meetups. Remember how many of them did he promise to do, and only about a handful of them actually happened, you know, and very small numbers and very interesting catered food at these things. So that's about it, I think, for Vinny Vincent.
Don't you disrespect pinwheels.
you talk about the Eddie Trunk interview and him being late for the Eddie Trunk interview. That was done in that room where all the merchandise was, Julian, that weekend. And my wife was sitting in, my wife didn't care to go into the expo itself. She was just sitting in that, where Vinny was going to do like that little meet and greet with us that first day. And she's just sitting in that room with your books. And like Vinny's people come in, like, oh, you got to get out of here. Eddie Trunk's coming in here. And she's like, I wouldn't know who Eddie Trunk is if you were Eddie Trunk. Like, no, I don't care. You got to go. So she had to go out and wait in the hallway. She was pissed.
I'm actually surprised that anyone thought my books were worth guarding. So there you go.
She didn't know what to do with herself either.
So. No.
All right. So this week, some new music did drop. Some new Vinny music. And congratulations to Zhel at Kiss Related Recordings, who managed to uncover a new Vinny Vincent guitar solo from 1982. That was released in Europe on a 12-inch dance single, of all things, by a band called The Third Rail Band. Now, the song was co-written by Richie Friedman, who co-wrote Back on the Streets, and a band that he had together at that time, and Vinny put the solo in it. So again, here we are, all these years on. I didn't know about this. I'm going to assume that most other fans didn't know about it. And, you know, the solo, it's very Vinny-ish from the time. So it's cool to hear new music, even if it's old music, because I think that's all we're going to get at this point is when people, you know, finally uncover a copy of the studio recordings of, what was it, Fred Lispius, the jazz cat from Blood Sweat. Oh, who was it? I can't remember the name of the band he was in. It was a Chicago-like band in the early 70s, but Vinny did work with him at Connecticut Recording Studios. I think that's all we're going to get, unless Vinny's selling demos and stuff from his collection to fans, and we can hope that some of that stuff leaks. So, you know, very cool. Did anyone check out that disco funk single?
I tried. I started off listening to the track, I never made it to Vinny's solo, actually. Sorry.
No, I didn't check it out either. But it does make me wonder about something you were talking about, you know, having stuff in the vault and that maybe some of it can come out, and how, you know, he's been promising these box sets of ours and like to come out, and he's never given them out. And I'm gonna guess maybe it's either because he doesn't have them or maybe he doesn't have the finances to do it. But I mean, I saw an interesting thing happen this week where King Crimson started this thing called the Thousand Club, where they have 1,000 people join their exclusive club, and when you join it, you get downloads. I think they said they had 750 different shows that they had on file and different things over the years that they have, studio outtakes and all kinds of stuff. And if you join it, then you know you can have access to it for free once you're in the club, right? And it's $150 a year, and for 1,000 people, that's like $150,000 that you can get right there. If Vinny was smart, if he actually had stuff, why not do something like that? Maybe not 1,000 people, but, you know, do a 500 club or something, and then maybe you can fund this box set that you've been promising for all this time.
When you're talking
about, because there's a lot of legal issues.
Yeah, that's always a problem. But when you're mentioning box sets, I can't help to talk about that Creatures box set that Vinny was on, because that new song I hadn't heard, Betrayed, a demo of a song, and I think Vinny Vincent was a big part of that song. You're seeing that title, you know, around in his stuff. So I think that's one of the finest moments we've uncovered since he made his comeback. But Vinny actually had nothing to do with that being uncovered. But that was a great find.
Yeah, that was a shock that there was a Kiss version of that. It was a Warrior demo, for those who don't know. All right, so let's get into today's main topic, which, you know, this episode is called Quick Quiz. And because I'm doing a lot of shit for the 96-97 tour right now for the Magic Project, I just bought a stack of magazines. And one of them that came, and I'm sure a lot of people will remember this, is the September 96 issue of Faces. And it has the ultimate Kiss quiz. And I thought it'd be fun to go back to 1996 and a mainstream rock press quiz and see how all of you geniuses do, because I'm sure everyone is going to get 100% on this.
Oh yeah.
And everyone is going to have a buzzer. So let's go around the table and see what everyone's buzzer sound is going to be for this episode. Ken, let's start with you.
All right, let's see.
The hell was that?
I didn't hear that.
Didn't hear it?
No.
I heard it.
They heard it?
Got to put it by the microphone, man. Come on.
Yeah.
What was that?
Was it an ack?
It's like a boing.
It's not like a mouth jolly.
Boing. Yeah.
All right. That's really tough to hear. Mark.
Okay, oh, well. Never mind.
Very fitting.
Oh, bravo.
Perfect.
Well played, sir. All right, Daniel.
What is that? Jet engine?
Deep, growling dinosaur roar.
Oh, really? Well,
that sounded like me after a bad curry. Lonnie.
If you can't hear that.
That's a horn.
Yeah, it's a horn.
Old style horn.
Like an old style horn, yeah.
Okay.
The clown car.
Might need to put it near a mic.
Clown car.
I got it near a mic. I got it. I don't know
how. Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, audience. You guys can chime in with the answers, too. You know, because I'm really not too
sorry.
What one was that?
I was trying to turn it up. Sorry.
Is that what you were running to earlier?
No, that's the touchdown song. That's my ringtone.
The touchdown song. Of course. No more of that.
Come on.
Yes, Ronnie. It is indeed.
Gosh.
All right, so let's go. You guys ready?
Yep.
Audio, sure. Are you ready? The Ultimate Kiss Quiz from September 1996 faces episode question number one. I'm embarrassed to actually read some of these. Name all the guitarists that have appeared in Kiss.
So it sounds like
Ace Frehley, Vinnie Vincent, Mark St. John, Bruce Kulick, and by that point he hadn't arrived yet, but Tommy Thayer. And Paul Stanley, of course, but not a lead guitarist. But
let's see if that matches the answer. Yes, indeed, you are correct. All right, Daniel's off the mark with. It's going to be the Scandinavian wins again. If Nils was here, he would already have 10 points just for being here. all right. Question number two. Six Kiss members have appeared as costumed characters. Name them and... Oh, you guys should just be pressing your
buttons. I'm slow on the buttons.
Daniel's quick.
It's like Jeopardy. You see the person keep... You're like, they're like...
So what was the
other question? They're not working.
All the members that had characters or what?
No, you have to answer it from how much of the question you heard.
Yeah, but how much did you say? You said how...
It's too late. It's too late.
I'm going to jump the gun.
How many?
If you had a premature buzzification.
Yeah, but I just want. Can you clear?
I think time's up.
Okay, but Eric Carr, Paul Stanley, Ace Frehley, Peter Criss, Gene Simmons, Vinnie Vincent is my answer.
Well, that wasn't the question. The question was name them and their character. So, Keystone Cop Car.
All right, Gene Simmons the demon, Paul Stanley the Star Child, Peter Criss the cat, Ace Frehley the spaceman. Eric Carr the Fox, and Vinnie Vincent the Ock Warrior.
Or was it the Gwiz?
However you want to say.
Well, they call him the Ock Warrior back then? Or did they call him the Wizard?
Well, it's up to Julian. He has the answer key.
Yeah, so Paul Stanley, Star Child, Gene Simmons, Demon. I would actually take exception to that. I would say Bat Lizard would be the correct.
Originally, they called him the Bat.
Yeah. Ace Spaceman, Peter Cat. What was your answer for Vinny?
The Ankh Warrior.
I said the Wizard.
Yeah, close enough. They call him the Egyptian Warrior.
Warrior. Okay. Yeah.
Eric Carr was the Fox.
Egyptian Warrior.
I think Lonnie gets a point. We'll give him that
anyway. Yeah, that's what it goes by.
See, Daniel, the moral of the story is wait for the full question. Mm. You're a teacher.
These guys are so fast, you have to take a chance at times.
All right, number three. What is the biggest selling Kiss single of all time?
Oh, crap.
I heard that monster.
Late one. I had to wake my phone.
Yeah, you know what? I think...
Give it to Mark.
Oh, no.
All right, Mark.
We were almost at the same time.
I'm going to go with I Was Made for Loving You.
You just can't say the right answer, can you, when it comes to that album? Daniel.
I'd say that they have picked Beth as the biggest.
Well, both Beth and I Was Made for Loving You are gold certified singles. However, the correct answer, according to this quiz, is Forever, the paper hit. No, actually, it's Beth. No,
oh,
it's
Beth. Okay.
Beth. Sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just couldn't say it, you know.
Yeah.
Dennis
on two.
Really, I find that unbelievable that that's the case. But maybe in 96, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's Beth. Beth is obviously it. All right, so question number four. On what album cover did Kiss first appear without makeup? Daniel?
Lick It Up.
Going to the answers. Daniel is indeed correct.
Oh, no, I think they did actually have some makeup on their face. Around the eyes. Anyway. Possibly. Yeah,
that was always the joke in the press at the time, that they mm-hmm. said that they had unmasked and they were wearing all this rouge foundation.
Still wearing makeup. Hey, that's your buzzer sound?
That's the
best. Or was that
you? A little late there.
Sorry, the buzzer went off by accident there.
The next question is going to be very divisive. In which city was Kiss Alive recorded?
Oh.
Daniel once again is first.
I would say that the answer, yeah, but the answer in that magazine would have to be Detroit.
What do you think, Ken?
There was also, what was it, in Ohio?
That's not a city.
An S or something?
An S or something? Wow, that narrows it down.
I can't remember the name of the city.
Oh, come on.
It's not Cleveland.
Saskatoon.
There you go. There's a word that begins with S, studio. No, Detroit is the answer.
That's the main.
But, yeah. You know, I think to be correct, one would have said New York City.
AB had a great comment.
Yeah, which studio?
There's three cities, I thought.
New York City.
The shows are recorded in Detroit, in Davenport.
Yeah, Iowa. That's
Wildwood.
Mm-hmm. And New Jersey.
And I thought
the other one begins with an S, like I said, I think, in Ohio.
No, there's no. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought. Oh.
Yeah, I can't think right now, but there you go.
All right.
Yeah, so Detroit is actually wrong, but there we go. What was the gimmick used to market the first Marvel Kiss comic?
I got that right.
Printed in real Kiss blood.
Boom.
Yeah.
All right. That's
correct.
We're six questions in. You guys are absolute geniuses. I think you're clearly going to be face certified.
I got the trivia box.
Ultimate Kiss fans. All right. Number seven. In which city was Kiss founded? See, I get delay on here, so I pretty much get to pick who goes. Mark?
New York City.
Let me hear you, people. All right, Mark's on the board with a point.
Yay, finally.
Yeah, I can't get the buzzer working good.
All right, I'll give you a participation.
That's okay.
Right, number eight. Give the real names of the four original members of Kiss.
Sounds like a fart, that thing.
Dan is just dominating us with his obnoxious ringtone.
He pushes it too quick. That.
Was I first? Stanley Eisen, Gene, I guess they can, maybe they, I'd guess they have written Gene Klein.
Wrong.
Yeah, but I think they have written that in the
paper. Oh, hang on, let him finish and then we'll see.
Gene Klein, I think they've written that. Because the magazine obviously don't know their Kiss trivia.
Okay, we don't have to explain 96, it.
You have to second guess them a little bit. And Daniel Fraley and Peter Criscola.
Oh, there's a wrong one there. But
there's definitely a wrong one there. So who was next on the buzzer?
Ken. I think Ken was
second. Ken?
I thought it was Heim Witz, right?
There you go.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and Stanley Eisen, Paul Frehley, right? and Peter Criscuola.
Okay, we're getting closer.
Oh, is that right? Not right? You're kidding me.
That is not on the answer sheet.
Yeah. Okay. Next up.
Lonnie Corbett. You gotta be kidding.
I would have
gone
with Ken's answer. I would have gone with Clonwitz is the gene. Paul Frehley, Stanley Eisen, and Peter Criscuola.
Yeah.
I agree with Ken.
You guys are hung up on the demon here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm gonna guess it's Gene Klein. They're gonna say Stanley Eisen. They're gonna say Paul Frehley, and they're gonna say Peter Criscuola.
Yeah, and this is really weird. Again, I don't think people would get this off the bat because their answer for Gene is Chaim Klein.
That's wrong.
That's not right.
He never went by that.
It would be Chaim Witz, and then Klein.
Yeah. That's total screw up by the magazine.
That's a conflation.
But is it Peter Criscuola? Is that
Peter Criscuola?
Criscuola.
Yeah. It's obviously Paul Frehley, not Frehley. Pardon me. I hate making that mistake that everyone makes. And it's Paul David Frehley or Daniel?
Daniel, I think it is.
Yeah, in the press when he got arrested in '83, it was Paul David. It was Paul Daniel. And of course Stanley Bird Eisen.
That's weird.
That's okay, I'll be Oprah. Everyone gets a point.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Under their stat.
Check out my buzzer ready.
Sorry. These answers again.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun.
In which band was Eric Singer in just prior to joining Kiss? Mark.
Alice Cooper.
Wrong.
I was touring band, I think.
Oh.
Probably.
Actually, I better check the answer first. Okay, yeah, you're wrong. Who was next?
I think it was me, and I'll take a guess at... he plays one, but I think the paper would say he played Black Sabbath. I think they've written Black Sabbath.
Wrong. Lonnie,
I'll say Badlands.
Thank God.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. I was going to say that next.
Yeah.
But that's not right either.
No, but I'm just going by.
In 1991, he'd been fired from Badlands, and he was actually touring with Alice Cooper. Yeah.
Mark's actually right.
He wasn't a full-time member in any of those other bands. He was all
hired. In Badlands, he was...
I guess you've seen Seinfeld, some of you. The Moops, if you get that reference.
It's the Moors, you idiot.
Good on it. No, the card says the Moops.
The card says Moops. There are no Moops.
What the hell?
That's a great episode.
Yeah, that was good. The Bubble Boy.
Yeah, the Bubble Boy.
Oh, no.
All right. Let's see how they got this next question wrong.
Okay.
On the four Kiss solo albums, which member's disc had the biggest hit single? Mark.
Jesus, I made a mistake there, but I'm going to guess because I didn't hear the question properly. I'm going to guess and say that it was Gene Simmons.
Cat?
Yes. New York Groove, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. Gosh.
Biggest hit single, Mark.
Oh, okay. I thought you said who had the biggest hit single.
Yeah, still. Was
Gene should have though. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so
Gene should have.
So New York Groove wasn't the correct answer.
I thought it was the album.
Ace Frehley.
That was the correct.
I thought it was the highest charting album.
Ace Frehley was the correct answer.
Right. Okay.
Ken got another point. So, name at least two bands that were signed to Gene Simmons' record label. Ken.
You have to answer though.
Don't Google Ken. Ken is Googling.
House of Lords? Jafria? Oh, no. That's the same kind of thing.
No, you're right. House of Lords or Silent Rage.
Oh, Silent Rage. Okay.
Because I didn't no one ever heard of the other
I guy. I forgot that one.
Yeah. All right, Ken. Good. All right. Number 12. This is only 20 questions, by the way. What was the name of the band that once featured Bruce Kulick and future pop superstar Michael Bolton?
Let's see that one.
Daniel.
Oh Lord, I'm
he pushes the buzzer, doesn't know.
No, I know the answer. I know that. Yes. I know, but you know, somehow you can't.
Out of time.
What the hell? Out of time.
Yes, Cat. Yes,
Black.
Cat.
Oh, the Blackjack.
Yes.
Yeah, but I needed 5 seconds, goddammit.
You had 5 seconds while you
no,
were...
No, I didn't get
to know the answer when you pushed the button.
I know what it is.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Yeah, but that's 5 seconds right there.
I'm a bit slow, you know. You have to give me a few seconds.
Oh. All right. Let's go. This is ambiguous and not absolutely clear. Uh-oh. Where did Eric Carr's first show with Kiss take place? Daniel?
The Palladium.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah. I'm starting to counting you down.
You're gonna have the countdown clock.
We will accept that answer. The Palladium,
thank you.
New York City. All right. Oh, this is another ambiguous one.
Oh no.
I'm sorry. This requires fucking Snopes and fact checking this quiz. In which city was Kiss Alive 2 recorded?
Darn it.
Gee, I love when all these buzzers go off at the same time. Audience.
All right, Daniel.
I think it's Daniel.
Who was first on that? Was it Daniel?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say Los Angeles.
I would say bullshit to that, but...
Yeah,
that's what's credited.
But I think the paper would say...
The paper says Los Angeles.
What days? What days, Daniel? What days?
Doesn't really matter.
It doesn't ask that. It just says where.
Get the point.
You can show off. Wasn't it like 26th, 27th, 28th? 26th,
27th, 28th.
Of August.
And 25th.
Oh, and the 25th. On Gene's birthday. Yeah.
But actually, it was all
another.
I believe it was all recorded in a fucking airplane hangar. The only thing deemed usable from the recordings was the audience. Name the only Rolling Stone song ever recorded by Daniel.
2000 Man.
Guys, you got to be faster on the buzzer.
200,000 Man.
You're getting beaten by a dinosaur.
Dinosaur is quick on the buzzer.
Actually, I think he's just got less latency when he presses.
No.
I think so.
Give me some credit.
Daniel's actually next door, lives next door to Jeremy, actually.
San Francisco guy over here.
All right. So, which former Playboy Playmate of the Year is a mother of two sons?
It's got to be.
Tweed.
Yeah, let's see. Indeed, Lonnie.
Lonnie was reading that last night.
Fastball.
I was at this guy's house. And we were putting in a system. I'm not going to say his name, obviously. But I was at this guy's house. And he had stacks and stacks and
of all
stacks
the
of magazines. Old Playboys.
Wow.
Mm. Wow. Probably has a lot of Kleenex around.
A collection. He collects Playboys.
It's stocking Kleenex.
One of my girlfriends, when I was 14, her father had a shit ton of Penthouse Hustlers and Playboys.
Oh. Yikes.
And I really enjoyed going over to her place. He was blessed with three daughters. I mean, I feel sorry for him after having all that. There you go. Wow. What was the name of the then most recent Kiss tribute album? Daniel?
Kiss My Ass. And the subtitle was like Classic Kiss Regrooved.
Wow. That's,
You're sitting back there all...
proud of yourself. Kind of peacocking around over there.
It's like, yeah.
Do you know how...
subtitle of it.
But wow. Do you know I actually have to explain that, because actually yesterday I was part of another quiz and that exact same question was there. So that's why I needed the subtitle. Yeah. So I learned something. Yep.
When is the last time you listened to a song or that album?
I actually listened to Anthrax version of She, because I think that was pretty cool. But that, other than that, I haven't listened to any of that album.
I haven't listened in like 10, 15 years, probably.
Yeah, probably about 10 years for me.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever done a show about that on that album.
Actually, we have. Shows. We have one show.
I think
show
we did and do
we,
one.
We thrashed the album big time.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, stay away.
Quit from hitting the buzzer, Mark.
Yeah. Hold your buzzer.
I haven't asked the question yet. All right, we only got a couple more here. And in 1996, what brand of guitar did Paul Stanley endorse?
That's got to be. I think Mark would be on that.
Yeah, Mark out there.
Ibanez.
Mark was wrong.
Uh-oh. What are you talking about? It clearly played it.
I'm going to say it's Washburn in 96.
That was for Psycho Circus.
Okay, Daniel. Was Lonnie wrong?
I have to take a guess. Gibson.
He did not play a fucking Gibson guitar. Right.
According to the paper.
No, you're right, because I remember those ads with him and him.
Oh,
and
God. That was such horseshit. Okay, right. Whatever.
He's right.
Wait,
Gibson. Oh, that is incorrect, man. I'm sorry. I'm going to stand on. I'm
Mark
dying
didn't
that
know the
hill.
Guitar question.
He played the.
You show me one. You show me one 96 show where he played a Gibson Les Paul. You show me one.
Many promos of him and Ace in these Gibson ads in 96.
Yeah, but he didn't play it at
not
all. 96. He never played a fucking one note with them.
Don't be such a sore loser.
He might have broken one.
Let's see here. Hold on one second.
Okay.
We're going to fact check this.
We're going to really go into it.
Yeah. Let's see. Where is my fucking directory?
Yeah, you would think Ibanez, of course. But...
Yeah, I would have guessed that as well.
I mean, first guess. Just look at the shows. Do you remember ever seeing him play one during that? I don't think I've ever seen
him. The real answer is the guitar company who paid them him the most is the one he...
That's correct.
Yeah, and that was Ibanez then.
It was a whore.
The tour before, Hot in the Shade, he was playing the Gibson Les Pauls, but he wasn't playing them when he did the... Come on, think about it. To do an authentic recreation of the 70s, he would have to be playing the Shattered Mirror Ibanez there for that.
Yeah. Oh, here's the correct answer.
Oh. Must be different then.
Well,
this
thing's spinning around going silver processing.
Okay. What?
Yeah, Ibanez.
Isn't that 97?
That's 96.
96.
So. Yeah. Mark is right.
Yeah, but according
to
the paper.
But I have to go by the answer on the show.
But the magazine is. He might have promoted both.
And that's just.
Potentially.
Mark's
just to really rub salt into Mark's wound.
Okay, that's fine.
A golden star.
I know what the real answer is, but
you know the truth.
Yes.
You know the truth. But you can't handle.
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, sorry. Every time I reset this,
I don't know which one's if it's real or Memrex.
Have you recorded your own burp? I think so.
All right, last question, and then we'll do the scores. Is on what holiday did Kiss Unplugged debut on MTV?
Oh, we know that one.
We all know that one.
No, what was it, Daniel?
Halloween.
Sadly, you're correct. You also win the quiz with 10 points.
Wow.
Lonnie in second on 5. My math's wrong on here as well. Ken on
Daniel
4
won.
And Mark on 2. But there you go. That is the Faces ultimate quiz.
Ultimate incorrect quiz.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
I can make a better quiz than that if you want to compete once more.
Well, no shit. I mean, that's the whole point, is just going back to a magazine quiz, just going through what they thought was challenging when quite a few of the answers are actually wrong. back in the day. I mean, if you're going to do a real quiz, I mean, you've seen Carl and Alex's Kiss quiz, haven't you?
I played it yesterday online against five other guys or four other guys. I ended up in third position, so we didn't make a fool out of the Kiss FAQ podcast, but I didn't win. They were crazy hard, some of the questions. Oh, Lord, crazy.
What was one of the toughest questions? I'm curious.
Well, from the top of my head, I remember them. It was a lot of questions about Peter Criss's early career, like pre-Kiss, and I didn't know squat about that. I guess
what you was would the address of Peter Criss's parents?
Almost like that. So I thought those questions were the hardest. What was the name of the girl that ran the wardrobe for Kiss in 1975? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Insane. Very good.
I have a bunch of that trivia box set. Has a million questions. It's a lot of hard ones too in there.
Yeah.
Mixed in. So.
Yeah, I think one of the difficulties in doing a quiz and coming up with one is one that can be engaging and entertaining without being too anal. You know, when you're asking Ace Frehley growing up lived in an apartment in the Bronx, what floor did he live on? You know, may know the answer to that, but it's going to be very boring to someone participating in when every question's like that going by. Or what band was Peter Criss in when he recorded the single What Is a Man?
I think the funniest I did was one I did for a Swedish podcast where I had like pictures and they would have to guess what era it was or who is it. And you know, there's a lot of crazy costumes going around in Kiss's career. And also song lyrics. I think we did a few song lyrics.
We did
It's pretty hard to come up with the correct song, even though you've heard it a million times.
Yeah.
So there are ways to do it.
Yeah, no, the quizzes you've come up with that we've done in the past have been super fun. I mean, they've been challenging. It's been great to have guys come in from different shows as well to participate, have a little bit of rivalry between podcasts in a Kiss quiz. That's super fun, you know, and that's something I'd like to do again. But again, that just caught my attention as something to do for sillies. You know, we got a couple more topics here to talk about. And one that was posted, you know, it's actually a couple of weeks ago, is Destroyer compared to Rock and Roll Over. And let me just throw this out there. It was, I received Destroyer LP for Christmas. I decided to spin it on my Magnavox. This was banned at 1974 on the FAQ, by the way. I have heard it before, but I was shocked by how much different it sounds compared with Dressed to Kill and Rock and Roll Over. In my opinion, both of those albums are much better than Destroyer. I'm sure this isn't Mark in disguise. Destroyer might be one of my least favorite albums of the 1970s. If you play Destroyer and then immediately follow it up with Rock and Roll Over, the difference is incredible. What do you think? I mean, yes, it's different. Clearly, it's a reaction to going in the artistic direction. But what is the one element, I guess, that really jumps out at you when you listen to both of those albums in sequence? And, you know, what are your thoughts on that, Ken?
Well, the main thing for me is the production, you know, the guitars. I mean, it's just the guitars are so, rock versus, you know, produced and neutered kind of on Destroyer. It's a big thing. I mean, like I said, way back, I said something about when I finally listened to Destroyer, got that album. This is after getting, you know, after having Rock and Roll Over and Alive 2, and then hearing Destroyer, and like Detroit Rock City for the first time, was like, whoa, what? That is so like just smooth, you know. It's very produced, and the raunchiness of the guitar is just not there like in Rock and Roll Over. So yeah, it's really the production and the guitar the heaviness, I guess you could say, of Rucker Malunker versus Destroyer.
Lonnie.
You know, it's quite different, honestly. I mean, obviously, and Rock and Rollover just sounds so much more raw, while Destroyer is very polished, and, you know, almost sounds like an Alice Cooper type of record, because I mean, and that's, and obviously it's a producer, and that's what he knew and what he was comfortable with and what he thought Kiss should sound like on a studio album, would be, you know, it's very over the top production, like $1 Billion Babies or something like that, with a lot of keyboards and just like everything thrown in he could possibly throw into it. But at the same time, I love both albums, and I say it all the time on here. That's the great thing about being a Kiss fan, is that you can love all of it, as different as they sound. I mean, you can love Rock and Roll Over, and you can love Crazy Nights, for that matter. I mean, I love them both, and it's just that they came out 6 months apart from one another is the most unusual thing. But I like them both. But yeah, the production is just, there's so much just jammed into Destroyer, and Rock and Roll Over just seems so much more stripped down and actually sounds more like Kiss should sound on a studio album, I guess a lot of Kiss fans would say. But, you know, but the cool thing is, again, you can love them both.
Yeah, it's a hell of a sequence. Mark?
Well, I think the main difference is down to the two producers. I mean, let's put it this way, and I think Lonnie kind of hit on it a bit with how, you know, he said it sounds a bit like an Alice Cooper record, because the fact is, and whether we like it or not, when you work with Bob Ezrin, the records sound like a Bob Ezrin record more than it sounds like the artist's record. Whereas when Eddie Kramer does a record, it sounds more like the band. You never hear somebody saying, whenever Eddie Kramer works on a record and gets a production credit, nobody ever says it sounds like an Eddie Kramer record, because he doesn't have a distinctive sound, whereas Bob Ezrin does. Whenever he worked with Floyd, whenever he worked with Alice Cooper, they always attach to it, oh, it sounds very Bob Ezrin-ish, because he very much attached himself to the whole production of the album. And Bob Ezrin does a lot of stuff that Eddie Kramer doesn't do. Bob Ezrin does stuff like he adds the effects straight onto the tape, where you can't get it off once it's on tape. You can't remake his sounds. He likes what's called baking everything in there. He adds the compression to the drums. You can't take that off later. He adds the reverb or a delay on something. You can't take that off later. He'll put the guitars on his, he'll put the guitars like in a stereo pair. You can't separate them. Yeah, you know, he likes doing that, where, and a great example of that is Double Platinum. They couldn't change anything with that, really, because everything was in on the multi-track. Mm-hmm. It is as it is, and that's that. Whereas Eddie Kramer comes in, says, you know, let's work on some things here. Let's put some amps up here. Let's try this and that. He's more an engineer than a producer. I'll always say that. That's not a knock to Eddie Kramer. You know, people like Martin Birch is the same way. He's not so much a producer as much as he is an engineer that people just trust, right? Because why do they like him? Because he lets them do what they want to do. He doesn't step in and say, no, we got to go back and change this part and do that. That's more what Ezrin does, right? So that's why those albums to me are so distinctly different. You know, I mean, the sonically, they're much different because of that. Ace could have said, hey, Curly, can we use this Fender amp? And he'll go, sure, put it up. Let's put some mics in front of it and do it. Whereas Ezrin probably said, no, we're using this. And that's it. I mean, there was a great story with Ezrin just the other day where Tony Levin was working with him doing the first Peter Gabriel record. He pulled out his Chapman stick. Ezrin looked at him and said, I don't even want to see that. Put that away. So they never even used it because he wouldn't even allow him to use it. That's Bob Ezrin for you right there.
Who did I miss? Daniel?
Yeah. I think the main thing is that these are two great albums, not only by Kiss standards, but against every other artist that are around. So it's mind-boggling that they were able to release two great records in such a short amount of time. And you have to keep in mind also, they released three albums prior to this in 74 and 75. So what a roll they were on. It was totally awesome. No wonder they kind of imploded a few years later on. So, but the difference is, you've said much of it. I think when I listen to Rock and Roll Over, the thing that I'm missing on Destroyer, even though it's a great album, is a feeling that is very vivid on Rock and Roll Over, and that is, it's fun. It's very fun. It's a fun record. You get all jolly and happy when you listen to it. They have somehow lost that on Destroyer, even though it sounds, to my ears, very good, and some of the songs are all-time classics. But I think they lost something when they did Destroyer. And the one thing that stands out for me is it's not as fun as the first one. You want to pick up the guitar when you hear every song on Rock and Roll Over. It's not necessarily the case when you listen to Destroyer. So I think that's the biggest difference.
No, you don't reach for a guitar with Destroyer. You reach for the sheet music, you know. And, you know, they basically had they started working on that in June, July 1975. So they had 6 months to create Destroyer, and I think 6 weeks to do Rock and Roll Over. And that's the difference between the two. AB nails it, in my opinion. You know, that one's like a movie soundtrack. I think you guys already mentioned that. And the other's a rock album. And that's the time and attention to detail, as well as the guy at the helm being two completely different. You have a producer versus an engineer. So there's no wrong answer when it comes to them, because I think you listen to all the Kiss albums, they tell a story sequentially, and Daniel nails it. Think of the amount of pressure they were under every 6 months or so to have a new album out. You know, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Larrabee Sessions. That's Neil Bogart pulling them off the road, throwing them into, they did 2 days at SIR in rehearsal studios. You know, that's right around the time that they write Rock and Roll All Night. Again, why I did the song story for it. And then 2 days in the studio recording four songs, two of which aren't used. And one of which, you know, gets revisited later that year, which is Burning Up With Fever. They recut the demo at Magnagraphic. It's on the Destroyer box set. And then they record it for Rock and Roll Over. And then Gene Reeve records it again. You know, so
solo album, yeah.
You know, they are generating so much material. Go forward to later in 75 when they're doing all those Magnagraphic demos. A lot of that stuff is shit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff is just very, very broad, rough ideas. And then you get Ezrin comes in and shepherds them and, you know, gets rid of the majority of those ideas and starts fresh. You know, so it's an incredible differentiation between art and business. You know, one is art and one is business. We got an album to put out. We don't have 6 months to, and we're afraid to work with Ezrin again because what's he going to do to us this time? You know, just imagine if Ezrin had worked on what was the follow-up to Destroyer. Because look what he'd done to Alice Cooper sequentially. Each one becomes grander and grander.
Yeah.
So, last topic for today is the non-scientific question for collectors. Are you going to continue collecting whatever KISS stuff you collect, even though you're probably never going to get a money back on your investment? Or are you still going to enjoy your collection, even if it is worthless? It's only fair to go straight to Lonnie.
Well, I've stopped buying a lot of things. You know, I don't buy the figures anymore. Like the figures they put, like the action figures they put out have really gone downhill, you know, in my opinion too. They're not as cool as they were years ago. And I've really come to the point where the only thing I really buy anymore is the vinyl that they put out. I know you guys kind of shake your head at me and Ken when, you know, a new colored vinyl comes out and Ken and I got to rush and buy it. But that's really about the only thing I really buy anymore. I don't buy figurines or trinkets and things like that anymore. It's kind of run its course with me. And yeah, I'll keep buying the vinyl just because it's the music. And at this point in my life, that's more important to me than anything else.
Can I ask you something, Lonnie? And this is actually a serious question.
Yes, I am taking questions. Go ahead.
Because you seem like a guy who's very much into, like, you know, like, look at your room. You have, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm a memorabilia nicely. Guy.
Like, you never got into posters with KISS? I always would have imagined maybe you were that kind of guy.
I do have a lot of posters, too. you know, I have like, you know, the old creatures and the destroyer ones. And that was actually, if we would have gotten to it, like one of the topics I was going to talk about today is actually like, what are your favorite KISS posters? But we can do that another time. But I do like the posters and that, but I've gotten to the point where I have a lot of the old ones that I really want again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not like out there
hunting them down,
you know? Yeah. Hunting them down type thing anymore. It's really just at this point with the collection that I have, I'm not really hunting down anything, but just different vinyls and things like that.
Cool.
Poster.
Yep.
I decided to put that in the frame.
That's very
nice. That's great. That looks very nice.
Hang it up.
Nice.
Yeah, my favorite poster was one I bought in Singapore in the 80s, and it was the Gronelund wooden stage. Yeah. I'm sure everyone's seen the picture, the poster. That was mine. That was on my wall growing up. Ken?
Yeah, I'm like Lonnie. I'm just pretty much buying the music-related stuff. Sure, we get a shirt that now and then either we have to buy it as part of a bundle, or sometimes they come out with a shirt that's pretty decent that you know I might get, but it's more about the music, buying the vinyl and if you know the CDs, you know, of course too, especially if it's going to be a box set, you know, for sure. You know, I'm all in on that stuff. So yeah, otherwise I don't need any more, you know, figures or little trinkets or anything like that.
No, I'm with you. I've never bought things and considered them an investment.
No.
You
know, yeah. I've got stuff, and again, I want to get rid of all my stuff. You know, I've got memos, real memos from the 70s with pencil notes from the Alive, you know, from them going over the lyrics and stuff like that. And it's not, I didn't buy it as an investment. I bought it because it had something useful in it at the time, whether it's something I enjoyed or something I was working on. So everything I look at like that, you know, it's like, I'll get rid of stuff, but I'm not looking necessarily, I'd like to get my money back or as much of it as possible, but the market isn't what it was. You know, when I look at over stuff in boxes, you know, I've got a box behind my sofa right now that's got the original 1980s Def Leppard logos in that were used for creating the artwork for the album and ads. And it's like, that might be an investment, but am I really going to find someone who is going to pay me? So I'll settle for getting near my money back in most cases. Again, so I never really bought stuff looking at it as an investment. And that includes demos and rare hoarder tapes. Do I want to see them properly used? Yeah. Do I at least want to make my money back? Yeah. But you know, like 2-inch reel that I got, I sold that back to the label for a loss, because it was the right thing to do, and that shit needed to be back where it was protected and could be released. So I don't have any fucking bobbleheads or pezzes that are worth any money, and I'm not going up on any live auctions to try and make a buck. Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really collect much stuff anymore. The thing that I do still kind of look for, I'm not so much into the new re-releases anymore. I mean, I have a lot of those ones anyways. I got like the Green Dynasty and the Orange Hotter Than Hell and all those ones. But I still find myself interested when I go to like the used record stores, or if I'll find like, you know, like a odd press, like an Israeli pressing of, you know, Dressed to Kill or something like that. Like, you know, if I find something odd like that, I will grab that because it's just something that that's always interested me more. Not so much for the music, because as we know, unless it's, you know, really poorly mastered in that country, for example, if they have the chance to do it, then usually it sounds all the same, the vinyls, like the vinyl, sorry. As far as audio and what's on, there's never any kind of weird remixes. But I love the sort of text that you find in these different versions of them, like, you know, how the layouts are different. Sometimes they're written in different languages. So those are the kind of things I like when I collect those, you know, different variants of the different countries.
Yeah, and Kiss Rocks, I like your suggestion for a topic for next time. If you could get rid of the studio chaps on, tracks on side four of Live 2 and put five additional live songs on that side, what would you choose? I can't remember if we've ever done that before or not, but we'll look back.
I don't think so.
The archives, because that would be a fun topic. So thank you very much for the suggestion. And then where's Drago? Crazy Joe. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, to be perfectly honest, but maybe we'll get the answer to that in a forthcoming book. Who knows? But that's it for this week. That's some
what about me then? Board.
What about you? Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so collecting Kiss. I think I'm more of a collector of Kiss fans stuff nowadays. It seems I do enjoy the occasional Kiss tribute band, so I'd pay a few bucks to go and see them. And what I especially enjoy is the effort that the Kiss fans put in stuff like this. This is a book from Sweden, and there's several. So I've given a lot of my Kiss money to these guys. And of course, you can mention Julian's great books as well. I buy them occasionally as well. And you can go back and buy. So books for me is Kiss books. I still find them very titillating. I love reading Kiss stuff to this day, and you do get to know new things, because if I buy an old record with a different color, I've already heard it, I've already listened to it. It actually doesn't give me anything new. But when I read, for example, this book, I don't know if you can call this merch, but this blew my mind when I read this book. I mean, there was stuff in here I would never have guessed. So it's fun when people like Carl and Alex put, sorry about that. when they put out new stuff in the 2020, still to this day, you can get stuff like this. So I have to tip my hat to all the Kiss guys out there that writes books. I think it's awesome, and you're doing the Kiss Army a solid. So
yeah,
that was it.
Alan. I'm waiting on my newsletter. You know, so Kiss in Japan continues to do projects as well. Okay. So, you know, there are people still trying. All right, that's it. That's the episode for this week. We've got some cool topics for next week. Got a few episodes mapped out at least, so we'll try and continue hitting the ground running. But for now, I want to thank everyone for chiming in with your thoughts and your suggestions, your answers on the quiz. Just a little bit of silly time after the uber deep seriousness of the 10th anniversary. But for now, from Daniel, I'll go with you first so I don't forget you.
Thank you.
Ken, Mark, Lonnie, and myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for spending time listening to the Kiss FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the Kiss FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.